Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Now, Dublin-born journalist Nuala McGovern took advantage of a green card when she graduated from college, and she learned her trade covering stories in the US, Guantanamo Bay, the inauguration of President Trump, the Capitol riots of January 21. She has worked for several years for BBC World Service, and just recently she landed the amazing job of presenter on the long-running iconic Woman's Hour on BBC Radio 4. Well, Nuala's home for the weekend and she's here with me in our studio. Good morning, Nuala. Lovely to see you.
I'm so delighted to be here. You know, this is the first time I've been in the RTE studios on a radio programme.
Which is amazing, actually, like to even know that. We're going to find out all about your career. But first of all, congratulations on landing that beautiful job to present Woman's Hour. How did it come about? I know you'd sat in for Emma Barnett, who used to present it. But tell me how it came about and how you heard.
Yeah, so I got to know Radio 4 a little bit better. I mean, the people working there and them getting to know me probably a little bit better. Probably when I was a commentator for the Queen's funeral. And that possibly is one of the most stressful jobs you might have, because they were very clear you were so supported, but it was very clear you're not meant to have one word wrong in that particular broadcast, which is a very long broadcast as well. And you're among amazing other broadcasters and producers and editors. But I got to know Radio 4 a little bit better, and they got to know me a little bit better during that time. And then when I was asked to cover for Emma Barnett, who was on maternity leave, it was, it was a pinch me moment. It was a dream come true, because I'd listened. I'd filled in a couple of times over the months. But I think to know that you're going to go and do it each day is completely different. And I had all these hopes and dreams of what it would be like, and it fulfilled them. It was just every day you would, you know, you might be speaking to an MP for the first part. You could be moving on then to, like if I think in the past week, somebody who sleepwalks. You could move on to the first female chorister in St. Paul's Cathedral. So just the variety of it fills for me every facet of my personality and all my interests. But then I think that ended, let's say, September 2023. And then it was announced not that long ago that Emma Barnett was moving on to the Today programme, which she began last week, the mighty Emma Barnett. I'm also a huge fan of hers. And when that was announced, I have to say, I was very keen to throw my hat in the ring. And I'm sure there are many people that would be wonderful presenting it, but I was lucky enough to get the gig.
How did you hear? Did they just ring you up?
They do. There is a process as well. So it's a competitive process. But, you know, I was working. I also have been presenting NewsHour on the BBC World Service that I know RTE takes sometimes. And also The World Tonight is on Radio 4 in the evening. It goes out at 10 p.m. And would you believe I was in the middle of trying to prep, as we say, so prepare for an interview with Ruby Wax, because O.J. Simpson had just died. And Ruby Wax, back in the day, she used to do these long interviews. I'm talking about 7, 8, 9 hours she'd spend with somebody. And so I wanted to know my stuff, and I was trying to remember that time and what had happened at that time. And I saw a missed call, and I thought maybe it was like a spam call, because I didn't recognise the number. So I didn't answer. And eventually I did. I got a little note saying, hey, you know, it's the controller of Radio 4, give me a call. So I called, and he gave me the news, which I was so delighted with, but gobsmacked, but still had to go and do the programme, of course, and not say it yet, you know what I mean? Keep it for under my hat for a little bit. But I actually kept it under my hat for 24 hours because my husband was away, my best pal was away, and I kind of wanted to sit with it because I knew it was going to be a new chapter in my life and in my career, and a very much sought after one. And it was just lovely to sit with it.
No, it's wonderful you got it. Listen, let's go back. First of all, where did you grow up? Tell me about your background. And you do have a Leitrim GAA connection.
I do. My mother is from Longford. My father was from Leitrim. I grew up in Drumcondra on beautiful Griffith Avenue. Mm-hmm. And, you know, went to local school there, Maryfield, beside me, Marino and Maryfield. And then I went to UCD. Can't say I was the most, what would we say, diligent student.
That's grand. Worked out fine in the end.
It worked out fine in the end. Maybe I was just working on my people skills. And then from there, I had done a year abroad with Erasmus in Venice. I'd been studying Italian and English. And I loved, of course, then kind of got hit with a travel bug or a wanderlust. And then once I had finished the degree, the next day I went back to Italy and lived there for a few years.
And the Leitrim connection, the GAA?
Yes. So my father from Leitrim, he has been somebody who has all through his life, he supported GAA, as did his brothers as well, particularly my uncle Tony, who sadly died this year and my father died last year. But their names are on parks down there. They, you know, the gold and green were colours that were very well known in our house. But my father was also a huge Dublin supporter. Like, we used to say he should only pay half price because he only ever saw one team if Dublin were playing, you know. But we spent our summers in Leitrim, and it was an idyllic way to have it. You know, like, we were in Dublin throughout the year, and then we would have weeks with an aunt. God, when I think of her, she had no children of her own, but she used to take on with all of us and all the cousins and let us run riot on a farm down in Leitrim.
God bless her.
God bless her is right.
So how did you then transfer? How did you get into journalism?
You know, I knew I wanted to get into it, but I felt, you know, kind of late 80s, early 90s. And I just didn't feel it was a path that I could do here. I felt that I didn't have the connections or the experience, maybe the confidence probably is the real word I'm looking for as well, to do that. So I went to Italy and I worked on a little student newspaper there. But when I got a green card, which my sister actually applied for, some of our listeners will remember back in the day, you used to send off this letter to the embassy in DC, and I got a green card. And when I went, I kind of put it into my head, I'm going to try and do journalism. Now, whether I didn't mind the medium at that stage, but I started in a little Irish radio station in New York, and it was the Adrian Flannelly show, and I went out on Saturday mornings and Sunday night. I mean, he's a legend in his own lifetime. And he was a real pillar of the Irish community in New York. Learned all the skills there because you were doing everything. I have to give a shout out to Adrian Flannelly and Áine Sheridan as well, who taught me a lot in those early years. And from there, I moved on to National Public Radio, which is WNYC, like their New York public radio station. And I'm monogamous because I stayed there really from like the late 90s until 2009 and started as an intern and then ended as executive producer, I suppose we would call it.
Yeah. And then when did you go to the BBC?
So I moved to the BBC. So I stayed in New York for about 15 years and then I moved to the UK 15 years ago. So funny, I'm kind of at that point now between the two. But when I came to the BBC, I had produced a lot of programmes and did lots of different things, like even organising how we do the radios for the Democratic Convention across America, you know, kind of big events as well. And I was like, what's next? And I didn't really know, if I'm honest, but it was suggested to me, why don't I try presenting? And somebody got sick one day. Then I was like, God, I love this. I love this, you know. It was about Angelina Jolie, I remember, and about polygamy.
Okay. Of course.
You know, why not get straight in? And it was very much a programme that was about the listeners and bringing them in and their thoughts. And, you know, probably a bit rough and ready. As somebody told me, at first you'll be terrible and then you'll be okay. That's kind of how you progress as a presenter. And I have been then with the BBC, so that was 2009 until now. And I do feel, you know, it afforded me an incredible career. It let me indulge my wanderlust in a way that I could never have anticipated. And I feel like I've kind of come to my spiritual radio home with Woman's Hour.
Oh, it's extraordinary show. But like, you've done extraordinary journalism as well. I mean, you got into Guantanamo.
Yes.
When few journalists got in. How did that come about?
That was so interesting. I was interviewing a commanding officer, as they call him, at Guantanamo, and I think he was defending at the time some of the feeding methods that they had. There was a lot of questions about force feeding Guantanamo prisoners. And I said to him, you know, that's very interesting. I can't imagine what it's like. He's like, why don't you come? And I said, I will. And so I followed up and we went down July 4th, I remember. And that was a time when all American journalists were gone. So it was just me and my producer, Neil Gallagher, also another Irishman.
Oh, great.
Who, and the two of us, but we weren't allowed to be separated, apparently, kind of for security. So we were together 24/7 for a number of days down in Guantanamo. But it was incredible to see. And I think to understand some of the arguments that there were about closing it, because it's like this huge investment by the United States. We stopped in Washington first and spoke to Republican and Democrat senators on various sides of the issue. President Obama was trying to close it at that point. It's still open, though, you know. Yeah. Funny, it kind of goes into the headlines and then goes back out. But, you know, to see through a glass screen the prisoners that are being held. And they used to organise between themselves. So you just have a lead prisoner speaking to the guards. Like, it was quite something. And then to see what the guards were up against, a lot of them young lads and young women, you know, they thought they were going, some of them says like they always wanted to go to Cuba. And I was like, this is not what I'd imagine a vacation in Cuba is like. But having those experiences of travelling continually informs your journalism if you've been able to speak to the people that are directly involved, and you begin to see the layers, and you begin to see nothing is ever as simple as it looks in a headline. You know, it's never that black and white. It's just shades and shades and shades of grey.
You were also there for Donald Trump's inauguration.
I was. Now, that was one I'm going to put my hand up here. That one I lobbied for. I wrote emails and please send me and whatnot. And they did. And it was an 8-hour broadcast on the Mall. And it was a bitterly cold day, bitterly, bitterly. And you sit outside, but the hours go in because it's all so interesting. You have a number of guests that come to you. And I do remember I was listening back to it for something recently, maybe for my application for Women's Hour. And as I listened, at the end, I said, there doesn't seem to be very many people here, but I suppose people will know what the figures are afterwards when they count. But of course, that became such a point of contention, who actually turned out for the inauguration or not, because those stands that had been erected, I remember them being a little bit sparse, shall we say. But, you know, that was another turning point. I see turning points. 9/11 in New York, which I witnessed. The inauguration of Barack Obama, which was my last job that I did in New York, and then went back for the BBC with things like the inauguration of Donald Trump. Went back a year later to see exactly how the country was affected. And I mean, now, look what we're looking at now, you know. Yeah. We have another election in our sights.
Fascinating career you've had. So do you miss, you live in, is your home London now?
It is, although we come back here a lot.
To Ireland, great.
Yes.
And your husband, he's not Irish or is Irish?
He's a wannabe.
He's a wannabe. Okay, that's good.
He's a wannabe Irishman. No, he is English. He is from Devon. His name is Tristan. He's sitting outside there watching all this.
So sweet.
Yes, he'd probably move in the morning, to be quite honest. So he loves Ireland. But we met in New York and lived in New York. I have an American passport as well. So I'm now American as well. And I just think, I mean, American politics fascinates me. And I often think Ireland is so interesting. We've got our own thing going on. And then we are geographically between the United States and Europe. And parts of us is kind of like the Nordic countries, you know, and part of us is a little bit American and part of us is truly Irish, you know. So I suppose just with the people that have been back and forth. So I love delving into, even though they can be vexing, the culture wars, how things, when they happen in America, how they affect other parts of the world. What happens in America, does it always happen elsewhere? Maybe not. But I just think it's gone through such massive pendulum swings between the election of Barack Obama, perhaps, and then to Trump, and then to Biden, and to who knows.
Women's Hour, I mean, I love it as a programme. Why do you think it has survived for so long and it is so successful?
I mean, we could put it, I said no headlines, but you could put it in a top line that there hasn't been gender equality achieved yet, right? I was going back in, just looking at countries, you know, where is it closest? And still, even with those that are closest, perhaps like Iceland, still parity hasn't been achieved. And it hasn't been achieved in so many areas, but we are making great progress. So I think that is the uplifting, the hopeful, also the fight is there. You have it also stories that just haven't been told. I mean, we could talk about, I don't know, female composers. We could talk about artists. We could talk about doctors, women that just weren't recognised in history, even if they were there, even if they managed to penetrate into that male-dominated industry field.
They were airbrushed out.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's all that to rediscover as well. Did you know the first presenter of Woman's Hour was a man?
No.
In 1946.
You're joking.
No, I'm not. So even that...
Okay, that says it all.
Yeah. So that kind of gives us an idea as well of progress that has been made and progress to be made. I mean, I see a whole generation of women that are younger than me that are coming into the studio as my guests. And they have a raft of different issues, right? Mm. They're not the issues that I had. Like if we talk about cyber misogyny or we talk about technology, maybe some of the issues I had, my mother didn't have. But there are issues that are still perennial. And you have all these women and many men that are allies trying to resolve them or figure out how do we do this. And, you know, laws change and sometimes on paper it looks like equality has been achieved. But you will know if you are a listener to Woman's Hour, that is not always the case. And so also the other part of it, which I really am into in Woman's Hour, is escapism and joy. The amazing thing it is to be a woman. And all these opportunities that there are that we can avail of in a way that we couldn't before. And what is it that we can't? What do we need to do? Like Beth Mead was in with me, you know, a lioness.
Yeah.
She's a footballer forward for the England team and also for Arsenal. And, you know, she's probably late 20s. And to see her and what she's achieved, it blows my mind.
Yeah, no, it's extraordinary. One of our lovely listeners, what an absolute joy it was to hear that Nuala would be a permanent fixture in Woman's Hour. She was in my kitchen while Emma was on maternity leave and I just adore her easy curiosity. Nuala is interested and interesting and I'm delighted to have her company in the kitchen again.
Oh, thank you so much. And I'm so delighted that you let me into your kitchen.
From your own perspective, do you want to change the show in any way or do you feel a burden that you're taking on this mantle?
It's not a burden. It's a privilege. I am confident in my capabilities at this stage. I'm kind of working in the industry 27 years. With it comes a responsibility. But that responsibility, I am so thrilled, quite frankly, to take on. And I understand that it means a lot to an awful lot of people. And it means a lot to me as well. And this is something that has been working for 75 years before I came along. So no, I don't want to like rip up the rule book, but I do want to find the places where we need to go that maybe we haven't been yet. I'm talking about where Woman's Hour hasn't been yet. And, you know, that we can collaborate perhaps with groups of women that maybe we haven't done before. I mentioned some of the younger women that are coming in. And then what about the older women? They had Gloria Steinem was on the other week.
Oh, she's
90 years of age. And she says she feels, A, that she feels like she's 50, 60, that it doesn't change after that. So that was good to know. And also she says that she doesn't have other role models now, but we're all living longer.
Yeah,
no, you know?
That's so true.
And
she's great.
So what does that mean as well for our society that you have, because women live longer than men, as we know, on the whole.
So since Tristan, your husband, is a wannabe Irish person, final question, would you ever come back and work here? Mind you, after Woman's Hour.
Do you know, they're going to have to pry me out of that chair.
Yeah, exactly.
Woman's Hour. They really will. But
you could live here and commute.
I could live here and commute. There are people that do it the other way. I love it. I mean, I'm here all the time. I want to give a shout out to my mum as well. Of course, Peggy, who no doubt is listening this morning. Hi, Peggy. And to any of the Leitrim crew that tuned in as well. And no, I'm going to go back tomorrow. Do join us on Woman's Hour. Of course, you can find us 10 o'clock every morning, 4 p.m. on a Saturday. Tomorrow morning, we're going to talk about the infected blood scandal. Also, we have a documentary on Anita Pallenberg and feminist theatre.
Good woman. Nuala McGovern, I was so happy to speak to you. I was delighted when I saw you'd got that job. Thank you so much for coming in and best of luck presenting Woman's Hour on BBC Radio 4. And this is, can catch it also on BBC Sounds. We'll take a break.